Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Treathart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that in its 21-year existence has featured hundreds of films, both good and bad, and responded to each with what we like to think is intelligent commentary. Well, sometimes anyway. We're going to attempt to continue that practice this week as, instead of reviewing what's currently playing in theaters, we're going to share some of the movies that made a difference in how each of us sees movies, period. Movie watching begins usually with simple reactions. What does the story say? Does it speak to me? Are the actors appealing? Do I walk out happy? As we mature, however, some of us begin to ask more. Is the story credible? Does it say something relevant? How capable and/or appropriate is the cast? Do I walk out affected in ways far more complex than merely happy? And as we progress as adults, certain movies help fuel our mental and emotional growth. That's the task we have set for ourselves this week, seeking out and defining the movies that, for each of us, have served that purpose. I'm going to begin by talking about acting, actually. I grew up during the 50s. I was a kid in the 50s. And a lot of the movies that I saw were basically afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon movies. And among things, I saw Orson Welles' Othello, but mostly I saw a lot of Johnny Mac Brown, Bob Steele, John Wayne shorts, a lot of Westerns. And then when we would go to the drive-in movies, I'd be sitting behind my dad's right shoulder and looking at Spartacus and the Guns of Fort Petticoat with Eddie Murphy. And I through seeing all these movies, I got this idea of what screen acting is. And then one afternoon, I think it was sometime in 1959 or early 1960, my dad took me to see a movie that I had never heard of before. It was called On the Waterfront, Elia Kazan's movie with Marlon Brando. And I was totally astounded at watching Marlon Brando because he didn't do what normal people do. He was mumbling his words. He was looking off at the side, as we found out later, reading cue cards. But the effect was like you've got all these trained actors and you've got this rogue that you've just pulled in off the street and he just takes over the screen. And that was probably the first moment in which I ever went, you can do something different. You don't have to have cookie-cutter performances, cookie-cutter stories or anything. You can do whatever you want. There's a new and different way. And I never went back to seeing films the same exact way.
Yeah, I mean, Marlon Brando and James Dean, one of his contemporaries, I mean, they're often credited with creating what I guess we refer to now as method acting. And the moment I always think of from On the Waterfront, which I think we can all agree is one of the great American films, is the moment between Marlon Brando and Eva Marie Saint where they're walking through this neighborhood that they've grown up in and walking past the playgrounds they used to play on. And now they're older and they don't know what direction their lives are going to take. And in the middle of the scene, Eva Marie Saint drops one of her gloves and Marlon Brando picks it up and sort of plays with it, like kind of tries to put it on his own hand. And it's something that happened in the moment while they were making that scene, and Elia Kazan decided to keep it in. And that's not something you normally saw in American movies, especially Hollywood movies, this kind of realism that was creeping in from, you know, especially European influences. So, yeah, I'm a huge Brando fan, and I think On the Waterfront is, I mean, I guess The Godfather is probably the best movie he was ever in, but in terms of his early career, I think that's on the waterfront.
It's
the
like
best.
Quintessential it's early Brando. And I agree with you. I mean, I think it is one of those films that could have the impact on you. And you put it in this particular context and why On the Waterfront, you know, meant something to you as a boy, as part of this sort of family trying to figure out what, you know, being a man means and looks like and so forth. So I think good choice, Webster.
Well, thank you.
So what's your choice, Mary Pat, for a movie that made you think differently about the movies?
Well, maybe this isn't the best example, but the one that resonated for me, last week's show at least, we focused a lot on movies that were women-themed. And so I decided to use that as a framework for looking at movies that had an impact on me. And I also selected Greta Gerwig's Little Women film as my favorite film of last year, of 2019. So I reached back to 1982 to discuss a film that I have mentioned, although not for a while, a film that I had mentioned on the show previously called A Question of Silence by Dutch filmmaker Marleen Gors. Now, most people would probably know her better because she directed a film in 1995 that won the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film, as it was then called, Antonia's Line. And it's about a multi-generational group of women in this family, told from the perspective of the matriarch. And it's sort of about female liberation in the sense that, you know, these are women who are making their own way in the world, having families, having vibrant lives, and men are not really an integral part of how they define themselves or even how they live. She also directed the film Mrs. Dalloway, the Virginia Woolf story that was made into a movie with Vanessa Redgrave. And so I think she's probably more well known for that. A Question of Silence takes place in a shop, a small shop, and there are women who are looking at clothing. And the shopkeeper comes over and chastises one of the women who were in the shop. Now, it's important to note that these women did not know one another. So they're unacquainted. And this, after the shopkeeper chastises one of the women, he ends up dead at the hands of these three women. And so that's only the initial part of the story.
It almost sounds like a Russ Meyer movie.
Well, yes, and it does, you know, bear some resemblance to Snapped, the show on the Oxygen Channel. But the most important part of the movie is the women won't talk. They won't explain what happened or why they did this. And a psychologist is assigned to their case to try to figure out if there are some mitigating circumstances here, because this whole thing makes sense to no one. And we see the slow reveal of the female psychologist appreciating more fully what transpired in this setting. So it really is a film.
It sounds like a contemporary movie. It sounds like a movie that could be made today.
Yeah.
Well, I think as a practical matter, it could be. I mean, honestly, because it is a huge, huge statement about, you know, the patriarchy and about women's bonding and violence against women that here gets turned in another direction and so forth. So I thought this was a very provocative film, and it just resonated for me and continued to do so for many, many years.
Okay, so now, Nathan, what movie have you chosen?
Well, as the sole millennial representation here, and I'm kind of like middle of the pack in terms of age, born in the late 80s, my movies are obviously going to be newer. So the first movie that I'm going to talk about that made an impact on me and changed the way I looked at movies is the 2000 film Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon by Ang Lee. On Twitter recently, someone posed the question, what was the first non-English foreign film that you saw? And I really thought about it, and I think it is Crouching Tiger. At least it's the first foreign film I saw in a theater. And it's probably the first martial arts film I saw, too. And it told this ancient story in this kind of simple mythological way. But I had never seen a film quite like Crouching Tiger before. Of course, I've gone on to see a lot of the things that inspired that movie and realized that it's kind of a synthesis of all of these different influences and styles that have been permeating throughout the history of Asian cinema. But when I saw this movie when I was probably 11 years old, I want to say I saw it in the theater, I had never seen a subtitled movie before. I'd never seen a movie in which the story was communicated through movement and color and just the way that that movie is designed, the way it moves. It was really transporting, and I absolutely loved it. I went back and saw it again even. So I still haven't quite seen a movie like that that hit me in that way. So that's my first choice.
Your reaction to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was almost like my reaction to another movie that you and I both love, Run, Lola, Run, the Tom Tykwer German film, which also is something every time you say, I've never seen anything new in the film theater, you see Run, Lola, Run, and you go, wow, That is something new, just as Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was.
And I probably saw Run, Lola, Run for the first time shortly after this. I was a teenager when I first saw that. And that is another movie where it kind of makes you realize, as, you know, an American growing up in, you know, the middle class suburbs, that there's a world of film out there beyond yep. just American stories. It sort of forces you to analyze your own myopia. And so that was the movie that did it for me.
And I liked your focus on the theme of movement. And both yeah. of those films certainly showcase
oh, absolutely.
That, you know, to
yeah,
the max.
Absolutely.
And,
whereas
and it,
Crouching Tiger is more meditative and Run, Lola, right. Run is more kinetic. And,
but it
and,
really yeah. shows you what can happen on screen with respect to that yes. issue, because it's not captured the same way in a book. It's not captured mm-hmm. the same way in a podcast or
yeah, right.
whatever.
And
yes.
both those movies
cinematic.
Are very different, too, in
yeah.
terms
distinctly,
of
oh, yeah.
one
distinctly
of them immerses
cinematic,
you in
right.
the story. The other one, Run, Lola, Run, is meta.
Love it.
Yeah. And it's time to take a short break. This is Movies 101, and we'll be right back. Before we go, though, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to continue our discussion about movies that have made a difference in how we see cinema. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
When you consider the future, please consider Spokane Public Radio in your estate plans. Your gift to the SBR Fund for the Future Endowment will ensure that access to real news, meaningful conversations, and great music will continue forever in our communities. One of the most impactful ways listeners can help is through planned gifts. Details are available from the business office at Spokane Public Radio, your tax accountant, attorney, or the Inovia Community Foundation. More information at SpokanePublicRadio.org/membership. And thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I shared a few movies that caused each of us, in our own personal ways, to see cinema in a new way. Let's continue. Mary Pat, what are you going to start off with?
Well, I'm going to pick a film that is touted for its feminist perspective and then criticized as being at odds with feminist values. And that is the film Thelma and Louise. And the reason why I selected this particular film is I think that when it was released in the early 90s, it was a time period when we were sort of trying to decide, you know, what direction will feminism take? And so we're starting now to get into the third wave of feminism and so forth. But Thelma and Louise, directed by Ridley Scott, of all people, so not necessarily associated with, you know, a strong commitment to feminism, at least at the time, but written by Callie Corey. And this was a first script, a first-time effort. And so I think that that in and of itself is notable.
And an Oscar-winning script
yes,
as well.
Yes, yes. And so it involves two women who are on a road trip. And as they proceed on their trip, some rather shocking criminal events occur.
I just realized this is the second movie that you've talked about where a guy ends up dead.
I know.
But
are
at
we
the end of the first
theme?
Act.
Are we seeing a theme?
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, yeah. So this one happens.
I like
it. So there are multiple opportunities here for women to, you know, sort of assert themselves in various ways. But the reason why I chose this movie is not only for its underlying sort of microcosm of women's experiences in the world, however fanciful they may seem in this context of this buddy movie. It's also for the performances of the two lead actresses, Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon, who I thought were perfectly cast here. Of course, this film gets a lot of attention because it's the film that people remember Brad Pitt sort of making his debut performance, in a sense, in Thelma and Louise. I appreciated almost every aspect of this film, you know, women being subjected to violence and abuse. And I actually agree with the way the film ended, and many people do not,
no,
including
as,
one person sitting in
right.
this room, I
yeah,
know for
as
sure.
As the father of a young woman at the time, I questioned then and I still question now, is this the best we can do? We can say, you know, if you stand up for yourself and reclaim your femininity, your feminism, your right to exist, you got to drive off a cliff. I don't get it. But then again, I wish my daughter were here, because then she could explain what she feels.
See, I always read the ending of Thelma and Louise as sort of a take on pretty much any Butch and Sundance type movie you see, where it's like, oh, for
years...
You go
into the sunset.
Well, for years in Hollywood, men got to go out in a blaze of glory, Sam Peckinpah style, and now finally two women got to do it. I like the ending of Thelma and Louise.
Well, yeah, and maybe it depends on how you feel about ending one's life, because, you know, we could be in different places on that issue alone. But it seemed like the perfect ideal ending to me, and so... Yeah. I remain a huge Thelma and Louise fan.
I'll continue again. I was a father of a young woman, and I was wanting more for her.
I don't think that your reading on the ending is wrong, though. Yeah. I can see both of those perspectives equally.
So, Nathan, you're up.
Oh, sure. Okay. So, in thinking about the movies that changed the way I looked at movies, I thought a lot about the directors that have gone on to mean the most to me. And so I'm going to kind of lump two together here. Movies I saw in the early 2000s as a young, impressionable lad, and that I still kind of hold up as some of the best films I've ever seen. The first one is the third film by Paul Thomas Anderson, which is Magnolia, released in 1999.
Oh, man.
This big 3-hour bustling epic about fate and coincidence and freak occurrences and just the reign of frogs, the folly that is life on Earth. Uh-huh. And it's set over the course of a single day in L.A., and we watch this sprawling cast of characters as they interact with one another. Some of them are just kind of off in the corners of the story and never really integrate themselves with the rest of it. And yes, as you said, there are these moments of cosmic serendipity that link them all together, including a musical number, which I know is the moment that loses a lot of people. But for me, it's the moment where Magnolia completely opens up.
And it's one of Tom Cruise's best performances ever.
I think it's his best performance.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that it totally broke him free from the action
film genre. I'm silently judging you.
Yes. Frank T.J. Mackey. And I mean, that is a movie in which the filmmaker is out on a ledge without a safety net. And I remember seeing that movie for the first time and thinking, movies can do this? Mm-hmm. Movies can be about this? And around the same time that I saw that, I also saw the first film of my first film of a director that I've come to really love, David Lynch. And the first David Lynch movie I ever saw was 2001's Mulholland Drive.
Maybe his best film.
You could argue that.
Oh, boy.
That was the first time I had encountered true surrealism and true nightmare surrealism, because that is a movie that gets under your skin.
Yes, it does.
Gets into your head, that messes around with you. And I think I rented that from the Blockbuster down the street, and I remember the back of the box said David Lynch's clues for solving Mulholland Drive. It turns out they were nonsense. They don't mean anything at all. But that and so I watched it over and over again trying to figure out what this movie was about. I've seen it, you know, a dozen times. I still don't know all the way. But that was the first movie that taught me that sometimes not solving all of the mysteries of a plot make the plot that much more compelling. And that is a movie that's a well that just doesn't have a bottom.
No. And of course, that had the amazing performance by Naomi Watts in the middle of it. I mean,
incredible.
That was just
two
like a
performances.
Yeah, yes.
Two completely different performances.
Yes. Those were showstoppers for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, then I'm going to go back from my final film. I'm going to go back to 1967. I was 19 years old. This is the era of the Vietnam War. So I was looking at service in the Army. I was looking at flunking out of college. I was lost. I had absolutely no idea what to do with my life. And I went in to see Mike Nichols' The Graduate, which was written by Calder Willingham and Buck Henry from Charles Webb's novel. And I was so enthralled. For one thing, Mike Nichols is a great film director. But second of all, the character of Ben Braddock, played by Dustin Hoffman, is someone who I could really relate to. I mean, having graduated from college, Ben is trying to figure out what to do next with his life. And he is, to the point, he's almost catatonic. He's stuck not knowing what to do. There's a sense of hopelessness about him. And, you know, I mean, his family's giving all his support. His friends are giving the support. Friends of his family are giving him support.
Advice.
One of the great scenes, the actor Walter Brooks takes him aside and says, Ben, one word, plastics.
But not bad advice.
Not bad, particularly at the time, 1967. But, you know, Ben still can't figure out, and there's a great scene in which he's at the bottom of a pool, you know, the swimming pool in the backyard, you know, basically drowning. And so then he goes into this empty affair with Mrs. Robinson, played by Anne Bancroft, before he falls in love with Elaine Robinson, Mrs. Robinson's daughter, played by Catherine Ross. And then he finds a purpose. He finds a purpose for his life. And, you know, it's got one of the great endings of all time, which is momentary happiness. But then you think, if you watch the ending long enough, you think, well, no, this too is going to dissipate. And I didn't see that at the time. What I saw at the time was a character and a film that helped me figure out, yeah, there is hope for life. There is something you can do. Just find something that intrigues you, that interests you. And
your
you
career
actually...
in the plastics industry really paid off for us. So
exactly.
I appreciate that.
Actually, print journalism. But, you know, plastics, print journalism, you know, whatever.
I think that you've articulated the timelessness of The Graduate and the intergenerational appeal of it, because I think the first time you see that movie, if you see it at the right age, you do identify with Ben, and you do kind of see the adults around him as these clowns. I mean, the way that Mike Nichols shoots them with this kind
of
fisheye lens, you know?
Yeah,
to quote Holden Caulfield, who has parallels. But then the older you get and the more times you come back to The Graduate, you realize the true hero of that movie is Mrs. Robinson. And she's the most interesting character in that movie. And honestly, Ben is kind of worthless. And so I just think that movie it has so many layers, and it's so funny and so perceptive. I agree. It's one of the best movies that I've ever seen.
You know, I had other movies on my list, too. I was going to mention 1969's Midnight Cowboy, which gave me
also
a whole vision of how men can be with each other. Children of Paradise, Marcel Carné's 1945 film, which is one of the great films ever made. But I think that we've pretty much covered. Is there anything else anybody want to end up saying?
I did consider bringing A Clockwork Orange to the table, but then I decided that might be getting into psychology.
That's a conversation for another day.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation.
I mean, that movie did change the way I see movies, I'll tell you that.
Yes. But I saw it at a midnight movie one night and walked out going, oh, no. There is no
I can't
hope
unsee
in the
that.
World. Yeah. And with that, it's time to say goodbye. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And early in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I shared our picks for movies that help shape our respective views of cinema. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again explore the world of contemporary film. Until then, remember these words from the late great filmmaker François Truffaut. Today, I demand that a film express either the joy of making cinema or the agony of making cinema. I am not at all interested in anything in between. I am not interested in all those films that do not pulse. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.